Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, July 2nd, 2018. And with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How's it going, Brian?
Hi.
Tell me.
There's a friendly fella.
Are you?
I'm a friendly fella.
Yeah, good. I'm so glad we have a friendly fella today. We also have John Martellaro. How are you?
I am suitably creeped out, but good morning.
Excellent.
Nicely done, Brian.
My work here is done.
All right. And next, hugs that go on just a little too long. Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we start talking about cars? Because that will probably be less uncomfortable for John. Specifically, there's an analyst report from last week. It was like end of the week where it was an analyst from Guggenheim. I'm totally doing this from memory because, you know, why would
for
I
for the museum?
Yeah, so the museum.
Listen, I don't think it was the museum. Hold on there.
It's a Guggenheim analyst. Huh. Which is not the museum. But the museum shares the same name. Anyhow, so it's Robert Cira. And he says that Project Titan is not dead and that Apple, in fact, is working on still making their own car. So not producing their smart car technology to OEM to other car makers, but
an Apple
branded car.
Frumpwoggle.
So John gives it a thumbs down. Brian, what do you think?
Duh.
All right. So, John, why are you shooting this one down?
Well, it's become clear over the years that Apple has had extreme difficulties with this project, that they lapsed into trying to sell the autonomous portion of their technology, and that didn't go well. We haven't heard, and this is the key thing, if Apple is going to start building a car, they have to start ramping up years in advance. They have to start acquiring material. They have to build factories. They have to find 1 million square feet somewhere where they can build a factory. They have to order these giant transformer-like robots that build cars from Japan.
They're robots in disguise, you know.
Yeah, and there's no sign of that. And simply trying to make a business case and saying, well, in order for Apple to improve its cash flow, it has got to get into the car business eventually. It's just balderdash. It's just shallow thinking. It turns out making a car, as Tesla has discovered, is really difficult in mass quantities. And so you can do 10,000 cars a year pretty easy, but doing 200,000 or 300,000 cars, that's a horse of a different color. And as Tesla has found out, managing production quality control and safety and these autopilot modes and the emerging technologies of autonomy and production line processes and getting enough battery supplies from the Nevada plant, it's all a big, difficult problem. And the car companies that have been doing this for a century are doing okay. But it's become clear to me that this is a bigger challenge than Apple even dreamed of.
All right.
And we were too optimistic. When we thought Apple was just going to come in, and in 2015 and 16, we thought Apple was going to just knock Tesla out of the park and just take over the electric car business. We were so naive.
Okay. Like, I was just like giving you all this rope to hang yourself with.
But hold on. Let me grab my popcorn. Okay, Brian, go ahead.
I didn't think they were going to knock Tesla out. So don't project that crap onto me.
Oh, I never tried. I'm speaking for myself.
Well, you said we. You said we. And
maybe he meant the royal we.
Editorial we.
Uh-huh. All right. So listen, I don't even know. There was so much wrong in all everything you just said. I
mean, from Vloggle. Like,
you're coming up with all this stuff that just has no bearing in reality whatsoever.
Explain it to me, Brian.
All right. So what was the first thing you said?
The first thing you said was
like the, like, I honestly, st- I, I started losing track because I was
saying that it's just a business case need, and Apple has to do it in order to grow the company. It's just,
well, who's crazy. Saying that?
Well, that's what this guy said.
He's saying that building their own car as opposed to going the OEM route and licensing out the technology fits with Apple's modus operandi.
Yeah, and it does fit with Apple's modus operandi. It would be really weird if Apple started not making the whole widget now. So here's what we do know, John. We do know that Apple is continuing to test autonomous vehicle technology, right?
For what end? What kind of vehicle?
Okay, well, do you think for a heartbeat, for even a second, that Apple is doing this because now is the time they're going to start licensing out their software? They're going to make software to license.
Well, if it was clear they've had a hard time doing that. The only taker so far is Volkswagen, right?
I don't think that they've... Well, where are you getting that from? That's news to me.
We had an article last week about how Apple had struck a deal with Volkswagen to build some autonomous taxis.
I thought that was Apple was partnering with Volkswagen to build some autonomous vehicles for Apple's own use.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, which is different than having a taker to license out.
Well, yeah, I mean, like
it's markedly different.
In my preamble, the reasons why Apple is building this autonomous technology could be something different than mass market consumer electric cars.
Well, Tim's already told us why he wants to make cars.
Has he?
Yes, he said that there are three things happening in the car industry: autonomous vehicles, ride sharing, and electric vehicles. And he said that being involved at the intersection of those three things presents great opportunity, or something along those lines.
So basically what Tim did was flat out tell us what Apple's strategy is.
Yeah, this is what he does. It wasn't even cut code. It was just like there you go. So what we know is that the initial path that Apple was on, and this actually speaks to John's point, is they thought they were just going to come in here and, you know, we're just going to do everything. And they hired all the peoples. They hired, like, you know, people whose job it is to design physical cars.
Mm-hmm.
And they hired everyone. Everything like the boom, they're going to make a car. And that, in fact, was a big catastrophic failure. And so on that point, John, you and I agree. But then Bob Mansfield was brought in to clean the project up and determine whether or not it was right. viable.
I remember that.
And the thing is, they're still doing it, and Bob Mansfield is still working on that. Now, that means that Apple thinks that the project is viable. Now, it is possible that Apple is developing, you know, the same thing that everybody else is developing, which is the autonomous driver technology, which multiple companies are working on, multiple companies are working on, and that they think that there somehow is some sort of profitable path towards developing that software and then licensing it out. And it would be, of course, the very first time that Apple certainly the first time since Steve Jobs came back, that Apple has tried to license software. Now, that to me makes zero sense. Especially when it's a crowded field already. What makes a lot more sense is what this Guggenheim fella is doing, which is reasoning out that Apple's entire modus operandi is to make the whole widget. And that if Apple is continuing to work on cars, it's intending to eventually make one of its own.
I know. But I've been following this pretty closely, just as you have. And I've kind of soured on Apple's industrial capacity to actually match what the other car companies are doing. I mean, they can't even ship refreshed Macs on a yearly basis. How are they going to conjure up the industrial capacity to go against General Motors and Tesla?
But shipping new Macs is not an issue of industrial capacity. Shipping new Macs is the the political will internally to make sure that they get designed and ship. Apple can make all the Macs in the world that it possibly needs.
They're just choosing not to.
They're choosing not to for some freaking inexplicable reason.
I don't think it's a matter of we could, but we won't. I think it's a matter of internal difficulties, either programmatic or managerial.
It's not manufacturing. It's absolutely and positively not manufacturing. And we also don't know Apple's timeline. We don't know Apple's scale. You know, it is. I'm beginning to think, and I haven't. This is not beginning. For some time, I've been thinking that Apple is probably going to make its own fleet of ride sharing cars, and rather than making a car to be sold.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of fleet doesn't need the same kind of numbers. And it is something that they could certainly contract out with a bigger company.
Yeah,
with. For instance, Volkswagen.
Sure. Those can be farmed out in 100,000 square feet instead of a million.
I accept your apology.
Listen.
Well, I did cover my base by saying that it could be some other project other than consumer-based cars. So I did cover my behind.
So good save, John. All right. So listening to what both of you have said today and watching the news that has leaked out over time, I'm inclined to think that, Brian, you've nailed it. And that Tim Cook really did just flat out tell us exactly what Apple's doing with cars. They're making a ride-sharing fleet.
Yep.
And I'm actually kind of excited to see that, because that could be kind of cool. I'll have to go to like New York or San Francisco to get to use it, though.
Yeah, or Cupertino. Because it would certainly make a lot of sense to start that out, homegrown. For instance, the rumor, the leak that happened last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Apple does have a track record, a modus operandi, of starting technologies that are going to roll out as a regional thing in California and then expanding from there. So, sure, yeah, Apple, I could totally see that.
Apple Maps works pretty well here.
Yeah, and we know that Apple Maps in iOS 12, the new revamp system, is going to start in California and grow out from there. So there you go.
I hadn't made that connection yet. Nice.
Hey, I'm on top of Apple Maps, John.
Got to revise Apple Maps fundamentally in order for the ride sharing to be flawless. And yeah, cool.
Well, one step at a time, and it looks like the step that's about to roll out is the new mapping.
Mm-hmm. And we also still don't know Apple's time frame.
True. Yeah, I think a lot of people, when they started hearing the Apple Car news, assumed that the car launch was imminent. Like, Apple had already gone through all of the testing and was ready to roll out cars.
By 2019. That some of the original rumors were, 2019, 2020 at the latest. And I will confess that I will actually lump myself proactively into John's, royal we there. I definitely thought that Apple was going to be able to do it. A modern car is essentially a software product more than it is a software project, I should say, more than it is a hardware project. And so, I was ready for Apple to come in and kick some proverbial corporate butt.
Oh, I disagree with that statement. Making a car is a materials challenge as much as a software challenge.
I think it's probably more, I don't know. Apple does happen to be an expert.
Selection of materials, strength of materials, choice of metals, quality, fit and finish, production, scaling.
Well, but these are all things that Apple is actually expert in, John.
A small scale, but nothing as big as like 3,000 pounds at a time.
Eh.
All right, so we'll be getting a chamfered edge liquid metal car. Right?
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's switch topics, because there's something else that I want John to explain to us, which is 4G, 5G, LTE. People are confused about what each of these things means for them. And considering we have phones today that support 4G and LTE, and we know 5G is coming soon, educate us, John.
Well, I found this nice article, Digital Trends, that did a really short and sweet job of explaining the difference between 4G and LTE, which is crucial. 4G is the next step of communication technologies and speeds, packet switching, 100 megabits per second, which was the original goal. But along the way, what happened was is that in the process of trying to implement the 4G network, this notion of LTE came along, which is not really a technology, but a framework for advancing the speeds, long-term evolution, LTE. And it was sort of more of a plan to achieve the true 4G speeds, as opposed to a specific package of technology. Right, and so what happened was is that the regulating body decided that the carriers could refer to LTE in the naming of their technology, which made it sound like it was something beyond 4G, when really it was the evolution of implementing the 4G standard. Okay. And so right away, the carriers tried to make us think that LTE was the next step, and started labeling the technology as LTE, and it even shows up on our phone in the upper.
Yeah, I remember making a joke about that where there was like a minor point update to iOS, and I said, "Holy crap, look at that. Apple just upgraded our phones from 4G to LTE."
And it's a label.
Yeah, and people thought I had to like clarify my joke, because people thought that I was serious and that Apple had somehow figured out a way to enable an LTE chip in our phones with software update, when in fact it's still 4G.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, am I correct in assuming that this is confusing for a lot of users, because different companies are describing LTE in different ways?
Sure. Sure. I mean, I was confused until I read this article. It kind of laid it out. And there's something even more advanced called LTEA, Long-Term Evolution Advanced, which takes another practical leap towards achieving the promise of the original 4G. So it's another confusing label. Basically, we're in a 4G world, and various carriers are different states of technology of implementing these 4G speeds.
Yeah, and I have been very annoyed, because I totally get that LTE is just a description of 4G. Anyhow, I get very annoyed when I see my iPhone switch from LTE to 4G, because I totally get it's still 4G. So there's no reason for AT&T, when my signal hits a certain point, to change it from saying LTE to saying 4G. That feels like a marketing move to try and make me feel better about a weaker signal.
Well, from what I gleaned from the article, and this is just a surmise, they talked about more successful implementation of the higher speeds in cities. And so what happens is that if the carrier decides that LTE really means 75 megabits per second, and you're in a city area, they'll light up the LTE marker. But if you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're humming along at 30 megabits per second or something, then they may elect to drop that notion.
Yeah, which it still bugs me. All right, so we are almost out of time. How does 5G fit into this?
5G reduces the wavelength quite a bit, and so that increases the frequency and therefore the bandwidth, and allows us to achieve, again, at some point, theoretically, a gigabit per second.
Okay.
But because it's a shorter wavelength, it doesn't penetrate buildings and walls so well. So there have to be some accommodations for that. And again, it's going to be a big city thing, and it's probably not going to be a rural thing for a long time because it requires repeaters to make sure that you get a good signal in a densely populated area where there's lots of buildings and walls and so on. So
yeah, my assumption
great promise,
is
great promise for great speed, but some technical issues.
Mm-hmm. My assumption is that the carriers are going to do what they're already doing in Boulder, where I live. And the reason they're doing it in Boulder is completely unrelated to 5G rollouts. But they're putting microcells on streetlights all throughout Boulder. And they are working around a political issue in the city regarding cell towers with microcells. So my assumption is that what I'm seeing happen in Boulder is going to help accelerate 5G growth here when we're ready for that to be a thing. But that will also be the way a lot of other cities handle 5G growth, because they can blanket an area with 5G with microcells, as opposed to trying to figure out how to get signals from bigger towers to go through the buildings.
Yeah. Yeah, and I read about, and I think I even linked to recently in Particle Debris, a test where they're doing pretty well in terms of distance, maybe many thousands of feet before they need a repeater, instead of the conservative worst case scenario of only 1,000 feet. So
yeah,
it's definitely not something for rural areas.
Yeah, well. Then I guess it's a good thing that all of us live, generally speaking, in more urban areas. So we'll have
We'll be in a 4G environment for another decade, and 5G will evolve along with it in certain areas over the next decade, but don't expect anything until 2020.
Well, that's so not what I wanted to hear, but realistic expectations are important. So I will adjust my 5G expectations. We are out of time, so we have to wrap up. John, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks. It was nice to be here.
And and thanks for digging into the 4G LTE 5G thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. And Brian, thank you for being here.
Yeah, oh yeah. This popcorn was good. Thanks for explaining all that, John.
Yeah. And Brian, it's a good thing you were here so you could set John straight on Apple's car plans.
Rumpwoggle.
Yeah, John and his fluff bumble. Listeners, I'm so glad that you were here too. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. We will see everyone again tomorrow.